show.
Hey there, folks, and welcome to the Entrepreneur Circle, where we've built a community that shares lessons learned throughout our journeys, celebrate wins, our eureka moments, and embrace the F word, meaning failure, which I've come to realize that failure is success in progress. I'm Eric Cabral, your host, a husband, a father of two brilliant girls, and I've been called a heart-centered entrepreneur by my peers and mentors. My mission in life is to make the world a better place, one mic at a time. So I'm happy and humble to have you join in on that mission. And I hope that by the end of the show, we would have added value in your life. So if you're ready to jump into the circle, let's get to it. Hey, I'm so glad you're here because I don't often get the opportunity to share with you exactly what I do and what we do here at Honor Your Brands. So we help the folks in our community and our clients to launch a podcast and then produce them on a weekly basis. We also help to promote each episode with close to a dozen social media posts that consist of quote cards, sound bites, and video clips. And then we post them for you on your socials automatically. So if you're a business owner with a ton on your plate, and a podcast just seems super overwhelming, I get it. We don't need one more thing to worry about. So let me and my team at On Air Brands do the heavy lifting each week so that you can focus on what you do best, which is to build your business, have more time to pour into your family and your community, or just plain chill and recharge. So feel free to email me at Eric at On Air Brands so that we can book time together to chat about how we can align with your mission and how you can align with ours, which is to make the world better. One mic at a time. Now back to the show.
Welcome back, folks, to another episode of the Entrepreneur Circle. I'm your most happy and humbled host, Eric Cabral. And with me today, as usual, I have an amazing individual with a super valuable and inspirational story that we're going to unfold right here, right now with you. But I first want to welcome Jordan Berry to the show, brother. How you doing, man?
Eric, listen, man, it's an honor to be on here. This is like the pinnacle of my life, and I'm just excited to be here. Thanks for having me on, man.
Dude, it's always good to have fellow GoBros on the show because we always spend a lot of time together talking about business and life. And when we get an opportunity like this to record, I learned some more things about you, and I'm eager to learn more about you and then have a deeper context when we have our other meetings. But for those who don't know, Jordan is, obviously, I said he's a GoBro. He's in GoBundance with me, but he's also known as someone who's blowing the lid off the laundromat industry. He is the mastermind behind laundromatresource.com, and he helps others find financial freedom through laundromat ownership and commercial real estate investing. He provides value to his community by providing all the tools and all the guidance and networking opportunities. He's a fellow podcaster too, with his own show called The Laundromat Resource Podcast. And he's also a man who speaks my language, living as a man of faith and family, married to his wonderful wife, who you wouldn't have all of everything you've had with the laundromat without her. We'll unfold all that stuff. And he's a wonderful father of two amazing children too. But thanks, brother, for being on the show. I'm so happy to get into it with you.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate that intro. That was probably too kind, but I appreciate it.
Dude, so let's get into the first question of the day for you, since I know it's 7 a.m. a little after seven for you. And what is the eureka moment in your life or business that caused a major change or pivot?
Yeah. So for me, so I was a pastor for 14 years, youth pastor and a pastor. And, I have two kids. They were both super young. And, you know, it was just time for me to, you know, move on from doing pastoral ministry as a job vocationally. And so I was looking for the next thing. And I had, you know, I was trying to figure out, okay, what do you do next, right? You've been in ministry for 14 years. My education was in ministry. And what do you do when you don't want to do ministry as a job anymore? And so for me, I had this eureka moment that was, you know, we live in Southern California here, owned our house. And the eureka moment for me was like, why don't we rent out our house and take the money we have in the bank and go buy a condo in Hawaii and live on the beach in Hawaii while we have young kids. Then when they're school aged, if we want to, we can like move back and net gain condo on the beach in Hawaii. And that was my eureka moment. However, parallel to that, my wife was having her own eureka moment, which was, why don't we instead buy a laundromat? And so to this day, I still don't own anything in Hawaii and do have laundromats. So that was a eureka moment. But and I'll tell you why, the reasoning behind that, and then I'll tell you the real eureka moment that came after that, which is, you know, I mean, the concept behind it was, you know, income coming in that's not tied to our time. And at that time, that was a very foreign concept to us. It was very new. Like, I didn't know anything about real estate investing. I didn't know anything about business, nothing at all, which is why everything went south really fast. Actually, we ended up losing a lot of money on that first deal, made a whole lot of, well, learned a whole lot of expensive lessons. How about that? In that. And, but the real eureka moment came, as I was working on this laundromat that we ended up purchasing. And, I was like remodeling it myself, a lot of times at night, when it was closed. And so I'd be listening to podcasts and audiobooks and started listening to real estate investing podcasts. And that's really where the initial sort of eureka moment was, where I learned about investing. I learned about cash flow. I learned about financial freedom. And I started hearing all these people saying, hey, this book changed my life. And you probably know what book it is because it's the one everybody says, but it's Rich Dad, Poor Dad, right? And listen to that audiobook. And then, you know, I was off to the races from there. So that was really the real eureka moment that came after we actually purchased our first laundromat. Mm.
Now, I'm curious if we go a couple steps back. Mm-hmm. So you kind of had a real estate mindset, you know, back when you were trying to make transition out of being a youth pastor. Was your wife in that environment as well, or did you guys meet somewhere else?
I did not have a real estate anything at that point in time. I had a Hawaii mindset. It was not about having a rental. It was not about, all I was thinking was, we're going to go live in Hawaii. And then, you know, in order to make it happen, we're going to rent out our house. And then if we move back, in order to keep that place in Hawaii, we're going to rent out I had no idea anything about real estate investing. So neither one of us were in that space.
That was some real estate thinking, though. Like you were going to
inadvertent real estate thinking.
Gotcha. But your wife, though, was looking into, was she also did you meet her as a pastor, a youth pastor? Was she outside of that? And how did she get a hold of these concepts?
Yeah. So we met in college, and I was originally studying physics, at UC Riverside, and, ended up getting a job as a youth pastor while I was in college and was like, this is awesome. I want to do this. So I transferred schools, to study ministry. And that's where I met my wife. So that's where we got kind of in there. And she also was not really in this mindset. What happened was you got to follow me here. Her parents had friends whose son worked in tech up in the San Francisco Bay Area, and he ended up quitting that tech job after he bought a laundromat. And so she heard that and was like, that sounds great. Like, he's only working like 5 hours a week and he replaced his tech income. Let's just do that. And I was like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Let's do that. So it really wasn't out of any like mindset that we had been developing or anything. It was like, that sounds good. Let's do that. And it's very out of character for my wife, by the way. It was very surprising. Even to this day, I'm still kind of surprised that she suggested that. but yeah, it did not come out of any mindset. It just came out of, hey, we heard somebody did this and it worked out well for them. We knew nothing about business. We knew nothing about real estate investing. That mindset did not develop until after the fact.
Gotcha. So I would guess that you guys like took him out to lunch or something, or, you know, kicked the tires on the idea to see if it was viable and real and if he wasn't, you know, totally bleeding, you know, money or cash.
Yeah. So I jumped on a couple phone calls with him And he did help me kind of walk through some stuff. He was pretty new in the business too, and he didn't actually know a lot. He just bought a really good laundromat the first time around. And so a lot of the nuances, he didn't really know. And I didn't even know, and I didn't know to ask, right? So, but yeah, I did have some conversations with him, did learn a lot from him, super appreciative of him to give me that time.
Yeah. And where is he now? Have you checked in to see how far along his portfolio has come?
I know, but I should do that. I haven't talked to him probably in, it's almost a decade, almost a decade now. So I don't even know if he still owns a laundromat or what. I'm going to look into that after this.
Yeah. He bought a Chick-fil-A or something.
Yeah, that's right.
That's cool, dude. I'm curious though. So you took the leap first and started to adopt the mindset in progress and during the process as well. And it's very similar to what happened with me. So you were getting your education. You're probably going on the forums, bigger pockets, things like that. Just looking for anything you can get your hands on. Was your wife doing the same thing, or she was relying on you to kind of, what's the role? She's like the integrator or the visionary. Like, what's the sort of relationship there?
Yeah. What we set up in the beginning was I was basically going to run the business. She was going to run the books. Mm. She was basically going to be CFO. I was going to be CEO, COO type thing. But you know, when we bought this thing, it was, instead of making the thousands of dollars a month that the broker told us it was going to make, it was losing thousands of dollars a month for a long time. And so pretty quickly, after maybe like 6 months, something like that, the stress of losing money every single month when you thought you're going to be making money, it was just too much. And so I ended up just saying, hey, let me take over the finances. Let me take over paying the bills, keeping the books, and basically just shielded her from the pain of that experience. So it ended up becoming my thing, and she ended up not really having a whole lot to do with the laundromat after about 5 or 6 months.
Okay. So you took over that, and what did you start to discover? Like, what was the big issue?
There's a whole bunch of big issues. Number one, we relied pretty much solely on the broker, aside from a couple phone calls with my wife's parents, friends, son. I did as much research as I could on laundromats at the time, but there just really wasn't anything out there. There really wasn't any information out there. And a lot of laundromat owners would not even talk to me. There was this big scarcity mindset in the business. In fact, when I started the podcast, the Laundromat Resource Podcast, and I interview owners and industry professionals, and experts, and I specifically designed it to ask the questions that nobody would give me answers to when I was trying to recover from, what's horrible about this is, like, there's this stat out there. To this day, I don't know where it comes from or how accurate it is, but you'll see it all the time, 95% success rate in laundromats. And I'm like, dude, really? How am I in the 5% that can't figure this out? Like, this does not jive with my self-identity. Like, this is not, it did a number on me, man.
You find that to be true? 95% of laundromat owners?
I don't know. So I'm like, now over the last, 2.5, 3 years, I've done literally hundreds of consulting calls, and I'm looking at deals all the time, and I don't know what the criteria of that is. I mean, I think the success rate is really high, probably higher than most any other business out there. But I don't know about 95% because there are ways to go wrong in this business too. It's a cash business. A lot of gotchas you could fall into there.
Yeah. I'm curious, and take this wherever it goes. The fact that it's a cash business, and there's a handful that I could think of, but in this one in particular, what happens when, as we start to move more to digital currency, like, what are the conversations you guys are having? Like, what does that look like?
Yeah.
More tech
involved. Yeah. Well, our industry has been very slow to adopt technology. We're just like, and you know, most people's concept of a laundromat is like a dingy, dark, half the machines don't work, half the lights don't work. It doesn't have a great reputation, right? Yeah. However, we're seeing a lot of change. It's more technology has come into our industry in the last year and a half or 2 years than probably decades all combined before that. And so a lot of digital payment options are coming out. So there's a lot of credit card, debit card, app payment systems, loyalty card payment systems, digital payment systems across the board. And I think it's nothing but good for our industry because this industry, I think, is one that's going to be blowing. I think it's going to go the way of self-storage maybe like 7, 8, 10 years ago, where self-storage just really blew up as an asset class. And I think the technology that's coming in that helps, you know, one of the reasons a lot of investors don't want anything to do with laundromats is because they don't want to carry around a bunch of quarters or have to go to stores or have to rely on people to handle cash when there's no accountability. But when you remove that and then you add in software systems that allow you to remotely manage your store, remote start machines, you know, automatically send repair requests to service technicians, that kind of thing. Now it starts to become something that you can manage at scale. And so, you know, I think this asset class is going to continue to just grow and more sophisticated investors are going to come in here. So, you know, one of the perks, I say all that to kind of contextualize this, one of the quote unquote perks of laundromats in the mindset of owners of years past and some now is that they're cash businesses. And so you can hide income, right? You can, you know, skim money off the top.
You can launder money.
No, you can launder the money, right? So you can actually do that, right, with the cash business. And so there is some resistance to the new technology and the digital payment systems coming in from some people who, you know, want to run their business that way. Yeah. However, I think it's a very short-term mindset to run your business that way, because long term, you know, number one, you're losing out on value of your business, in equity in your business when it comes time to sell. And then the number two, I mean, there's just so many tax advantages of owning a laundromat, you know, from running business expenses to depreciation. I mean, there's just a whole bunch of ways that you can offset most, if not all, of that income that you really don't need to assume the risk of skimming money off the top. So all that to say, there's, you know, there's people who are embracing it and moving things forward. And then there's people who are digging their heels in and, you know, trying to keep it how it's always been.
Yeah. And you can only fight it for so long until you become obsolete. And people are going to go to the one across the street because it's more teched out. It's got the LCDs or whatever. It's got all the loyalty programs and safety measures, I imagine, too, you know, with, you know, because like you said, the stigma attached to, and, you know, I think back to the days when I was little in Yonkers, New York, and there was a period of time, I think my parents, we were living in an apartment complex, and we didn't have we didn't have a washer dryer. And there's a lot of women in there, and, you know, safety, I'm sure, is a concern. And so aside from cameras and things like that, like, what are safety, not just for the community, but like for the owners, like you said, who have pockets full of cash and coins?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, a big shift that's starting to happen is we're moving towards larger laundromats and more modernized laundromats, right? And so along with that, you know, laundromats typically have been unattended, and there are still a ton of unattended laundromats, right? There will be probably in perpetuity, right? There still will be. But there's more and more full service laundry centers happening right now. And so along with that comes having an attendant physically at the store all the time, right? And so, you know, I have one unattended and one fully attended laundromat. And my fully attended laundromat's in South Central LA. But I have way less problems there than my other laundromat, which is in Montebello, sort of border of East LA. And it's because there's somebody there, right? It's a rougher neighborhood, but there's somebody there. And so, you know, people are drawn to the unattended one because they can do what they want because nobody's there. And we have cameras and we have, you know, people checking in and, you know, all that stuff. But, you know, it's just harder to manage, right? So one thing is that there's somebody there more often just to kind of keep an eye on things. And also, like, when you're collecting coins and stuff like that, it's nice to have, I just have my attendant just kind of walking around out front while I'm doing that, just to have eyes on stuff there. So, yeah. So, I mean, I think there's that, there's security systems for when you're closed down, you know, all that kind of stuff, but you know, nothing too crazy. You know, safety is, it's super important. And it's something that I didn't have at my first one. My first one, when I bought it, not only was it losing money, but it had become gang turf with the previous owner who almost never went there. And so I literally got into fist fights, at that laundromat. And, not the typical experience, but, but that was the situation I walked into. And I just remember thinking, you know, man, I've got two young kids and I bought this laundromat to make some money and spend more time with the kids. But now I'm spending a lot of time at this laundromat, not making money, and my safety's in jeopardy. Like, this is not what I was looking for.
Yeah. Risking your life. I mean, yeah. So what were you just defending yourself from someone trying to rob you, or what's
I mean, how do you people, not quit after that?
Yeah. You're like, hey man, you didn't move it to the dryer. Just, yeah. It's like,
go faster. It was literally, I mean, it was literally gang turf. And so it was people, you know, hanging out where I'm like, hey, and I started, like, I'm coming from pastoral ministry, right? Like, I started, I just kind of laugh at myself because I, you know, I want to give people, I want to show people respect and I want to give people the benefit of the doubt. And so I'd go to people and I'd say, hey, listen, like, no big deal. Like, but this is a business. You can't hang out here. So, you know, you can do laundry here anytime. You're more than welcome. But if you're not doing laundry, you can't be here. Right. And what I learned over time is that some people can't hear you when you speak that way. You have to speak to them in a way that they can hear you. But it was literally like this confrontation, like, what are you going to do? Make me leave?
What would be,
like,
the way that you would speak to them? Like, flipping that.
I would still speak to them that way the first time.
Yeah.
Because I want to give people the benefit of the doubt. I want to show people respect. But a lot of times I get stonewalled or they'd get in my face, you know, right back, like, who are you to tell me that? And I'm like, well, this is my laundromat.
Yeah.
So, I mean, then you just have to get stern. You got to say, hey, get the hell out of here. I'm calling the cops right now. Like that, I mean, you know, that's kind of where you got to go. And because that's the way that they speak, right? And that's the way that they can hear you. And so, you know, it was not, it changed. I'll be honest, man, it changed me a little bit. Like, I would never speak to anybody that way, you know, prior to this. But, you know, it got to a point where I'm like, okay, like, this is not working. So I have to try something else.
I have to be someone else.
And, you know, and I did, like, call the police every time, no matter what, like, big, small, doesn't matter. I'd call the police. Part of that was to get them to just keep showing up here and make it more uncomfortable to hang out at my laundromat than it was, you know, than it was worth to try to hang out there. But yeah, man, it was rough.
Wow. How do you not quit after the first altercation? I'm guessing there was more than one.
Yeah. I put four people in the hospital.
Wow. Look at you, bro.
Yeah, I didn't realize,
man. And these are people that were ganged up, or I'm guessing, or associated with.
Yeah. I mean,
good thing. Yeah. Nothing major happened.
No, I know. I mean, it is lucky. It is lucky. Like, I've done Krav Maga, which is like an Israeli close quarters combat
fighting
system. But okay. I've done that for like 12 years at the time. And so I'd never used it before.
What a good skill set to have in that environment, yeah, bro. Holy came in moly. Handy. Wow. Because then instincts just take over if you've been doing it for that long.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, yeah. And that was for sure the case. But yeah, I mean, how do I not quit? I should have, is the answer to your question. Like, I didn't know how. I didn't know how to quit. Like, genuinely, I didn't know how to quit. Mm-hmm. I was losing money. I'm like, who's going to buy this thing? I'm fighting people. I'm like, who's going to buy? Like,
yeah.
Am I going to put somebody else in this situation? Like, I was like genuinely having this sort of moral conflict of like, I don't want to be here, but I don't want to put somebody else here either. And you know, it might've been, you know, kind of reflecting back on it, might've been a little bit arrogant to think that somebody else probably could have handled it better than me, who had more experience with this, or I don't know. I didn't know what I was doing. Right. So, but a big part of the reason I didn't quit is because I didn't know how.
And how did your wife feel about it during this
period? Hated every second of it, regretted every second of it. Especially, we stopped talking about the laundromat. Like, the finances was one thing, but then getting into, you know, physical altercations, she can handle that, right?
Yeah.
And so there's still there's crazy stuff happened there, man. There's still stories that my wife doesn't know over there. Just some wild stuff.
Yeah.
I just want to caveat, this is not a typical experience with laundromats. It's just a unique one that I walked into.
Yeah. Especially if you're buying in like world famous, to me anyway, I don't know if it's world famous, but at least in the States here, you know, South Central LA or areas like that, man, are rough.
Yeah.
Bro. Like, holy moly, make movies, music, you name it.
Yeah.
Tons of stories about that area. So, yeah.
None of this was in South Central LA, though. It was in the other one. I had almost no problems. Yeah, almost no problems in South Central. I did have some, but not nearly as many.
So we're talking about all the potential cons. It's not the experience for everyone. I know people that have jumped into this industry have had crazy success. You know, we talk about Cody Sanchez, Dave, Mentz, all these other guys and people. Let's talk about some of the good stuff.
Let's do that.
Versus all the more. Although this is fascinating to me, we could talk more offline about it. But
I'm happy to talk about sort of the bad stuff in my kind of personal experience. Like I said, it's not a typical experience, but it's also why I started Laundromat Resource. Right? It's the lessons I learned were very expensive, not just financially, but you know, I mean. Some of the stuff that I went through, like nobody should ever have to go through that, especially when they're trying to do something for a community and build a business for themselves and their family. Like that's not the way to do it, right? So that's why a big part of why I started Laundromat Resource. And, you know, if I had to go back, would I do it over again? Not the same way for sure, but do I regret it? No, because it's allowed me to build this platform that's helping a lot of people achieve financial freedom. So going to the positives is, man, there is, I can't think of a single thing that you can buy that's going to give you the cash flow that a laundromat is going to give you. And one of the things I say often is, you know, the average real estate deal, like investment, is it can't touch the average laundromat deal when it comes to cash flow. And so one of the things I advise people is like, hey, if your goal is to leave your 9-to-5, leave your W-2 as soon as possible, then consider buying a business like a laundromat because the cash flow is going to be so much higher than something like real estate. And then once you have accumulated that cash flow in order to achieve your financial freedom, then start funneling that money into the real estate for that, you know, long-term wealth, looking for the equity, that kind of thing. But you know, the cash flow and the relatively low time commitment just make laundromats great. And there's great tax advantages too.
Let's get an example of some of the cash flow and the numbers for anyone out there who's, you know, maybe an example of what a typical real estate you know, cash flow asset could be like. And, you know, I could throw mine out there. I bought a 2-unit several years ago, maybe five, I don't even, time just keeps flying by, but for roughly 90K, it cash flows about after all operating expenses and, you know, projections. I'm losing all my language here because I'm not super active in it anymore. For vacancies and things like that, 10 to 12K in cash flow per year, by 10, 20 of those, right? That's a lot of passive income. So that to me is a typical real estate investment. What does it look like in the laundromat space?
Yeah. And I will just say that, I think that's actually a pretty good return on your money.
Yeah. Well, I bought it a while ago.
and you can't, as I was going to say, you can't find those deals hardly now.
Very true.
With the market too.
So 2017, 18. So yeah, let's just put that into context. It's 2023.
Yeah. So I think a typical real estate deal, you're looking at probably if you're finding a pretty good one, you're looking at like an 8 to 10% return on your money. Mm-hmm. The average laundromat deal, just a base hit deal, not a home run deal, a base hit deal, you're looking at a 20 to 25% return on your money. That's unleveraged. Usually with the real estate, that's leveraged 8 to 10%. And sometimes you can go higher than that. But the average base hit deal for a laundromat's 20 to 25. And then when you put leverage on top of that, that number just goes up from there. So, you know, 35 to 50 plus percent cash on cash return is not uncommon in this business. Which you can see how that can compound really quickly and add up and, you know, add up to your financial freedom, really, if that's what your goal is.
Yeah. So, that's nuts, you know,
it takes like one to three laundromats, and almost everybody can replace their 9-to-5 income with 1 to 3 laundromats.
Mm. And my marketing branding brain goes right to buying more than one and putting a brand on it that's worth, you know, more than one, right? Mm-hmm. You have a portfolio of them that's all under some type of a brand. Let's call it even your own franchise, and then selling. I know that we talked about Cody doing that. I don't know if she still does that, but Cody Sanchez creating a brand and buy dozens of them and then roll it up and sell the whole portfolio. Is that a goal or is that a thought or is that not in the plan for you?
It's interesting you ask that right now. So I do have a small investment fund. However, I just had a podcast interview on my podcast last week, actually, and we were talking about like, hey, the first $100 million laundromat company is coming. And it just got my wheels turning. I'm like, yeah, it is coming. You know, the technology is there. The systems, the standard operating procedures are there now. Like it's ripe for this. And who better to roll out a $100 million laundromat company than me?
There you go.
So I don't know. Just there's a lot to kick around when it comes to that. There are still a lot of obstacles to having a portfolio like that. I've got buddies with, you know, 30, 40 laundromats, not very many, but a couple. And so it is doable to have that kind of scale plus, but there are definitely some obstacles to overcome when you're running at that scale. So
would you recommend they be like, say you do create a portfolio of, you know, 10, 20, 30 like that, and you said it's not common, to be localized in some reach, or are there such thing as nationwide guys that are just buying in different states?
I know of one person who's buying in multiple locations at scale. You need at least probably 3 laundromats in an area so that you can support like a management system. You got to have somebody that you're paying more than minimum wage to help you manage your businesses, right? Around 3, sometimes you can do it with 2 or 5, but around 3 you need in a specific area in order to have like a regional manager who can help you manage those. I don't know. There's interesting
economies of scale, right? It's very much like the guys we roll with, you know, buying apartments, you know, and concentrating on an area until you get to a certain degree where, yeah, you have a management team and you hit all the bases. But that's good. That's good. I'm excited for you, man, and everything you're doing. And being the resource is key. What was the germ that was planted? How did that come to be? And what was the first thing that you did to kick that off?
Yeah. So I got to a point where I started figuring some things out. And then, you know, I had a couple conversations with people who had similar experiences, not to the physicality of their ownership, not fighting people and stuff like that.
But well, they didn't have Krav Maga in their belt. Like you
listen, listen, man.
Dude, I mean, what a great skill. It's crazy, dude, that you happen to have like the youth pastor and patience.
Yeah,
and then also, okay, hey, when you break my patience, I'm gonna break your neck. Yeah, yes.
I'll put that on a t-shirt. That's great. I like that.
They won't mess with you.
Yeah. yeah. So I had a couple of conversations with people who, you know, got caught up in what I call the laundry mill. And so I had noticed a couple brokers, including mine, who would do this where they would, you know, sell a laundromat on a dream of making a bunch of money that it was never really going to make. And then, you know, the buyer running it for a year or two, realizing it's not going to make what they want, bringing it back to the broker, and then the broker doing it all over again. And I had noticed that, and I was like, you know what? Like, nobody should have to go through that. Like, nobody should have to learn the lessons I learned the way that I learned them. So, you know, not on my watch, right? And so that I started a blog where I just started, you know, writing down the lessons that I learned. And then that, you know, writing's hard, you know? So I was like, well, I can just talk about it on YouTube. So then I started a YouTube channel. And then I was like, well, listen, if I really want to help people, then I should talk to people who really know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And so that's where the podcast came into play. And I started interviewing owners, and the podcast, I mean, the YouTube does pretty well. It's got like, I don't know, 17 or 18,000 subscribers right now. The podcast, though, it just blows me away. It's the top 1% podcast. It does like pretty well. And it's like this little laundromat podcast. And I'm just talking to humble laundromat owners for like an hour and a half. And people just love it. And like people get so, I get so much good stuff out of talking to people and hearing their stories and their experiences and lessons they've learned and what's working for them and what didn't work for them. And it's super cool, man. And one thing I found is that when you host a podcast, you've got some level of authority. When you host an interview podcast, all the expertise and authority of any guest you have on automatically gets transferred to you also. Mm-hmm. And so it's really been a really good experience. And it's given me a way to, number one, personally help people get into this industry or grow in this industry. And also it's given me, like, having good guests on has increased the platform, which has given more people in this industry a platform to be able to help this industry also. And in fact, I can think off the top of my head, 5 different podcasts and multiple YouTube channels that have started because people have come on my podcast and then spun off their own thing because of it. And I love that. I think that's awesome that is happening, and that wouldn't have happened if the platform wasn't there and if people weren't willing to come on and share their story. So it's been super cool.
Yeah, dude. Congratulations on all that, man. That's like such a sort of a Cinderella type story where, you know, you did this thing, you had no idea where it was going to take you, and then you became the guy, the resource for others that you were looking for back when you were seeking and joining forums and finding information for yourself. Now you've become the guy, and it just speaks to how important, you know, helping others is and having some value, especially when it's in a niche and micro niche space like this. if you're right and there's going to be a $100 million laundromat brand, or you know, this whole industry starts to explode like storage and self-storage did, you're going to be on the forefront, man. So congrats. That's awesome.
I appreciate that. Yeah.
I could be like, I knew Jordan back when.
I'm like, Eric who?
What? Yeah, yeah. Now you'll be like Cody, who doesn't return my texts anymore. Yeah. But dude, let's get into the last couple segments of the show, and that being one of my favorites, which is embracing the F word, meaning failure. So any stories, lessons learned that you could share with us?
Yeah, man. So, I mean, obviously, like, hearing a little bit of my story already, like my first experience into this industry was not good. And I got to a point where I had to make a decision, like, do I cut my losses and try a different direction? Or do I say, okay, I've learned these expensive, heart-wrenching, really, lessons. Can I put them to use? Like, should I just keep plowing forward? And, you know, I think that's been a big takeaway for me. It's like the story doesn't end in the hardship, right? And when you're in the hardship, I'll just like, I got to some desperate points, along the journey where I just wanted to quit everything. I like desperately wanted, probably if I knew how, I would have, right? But it's hard to know. It's hard to remember that when you're in the middle of it, that the story doesn't end in the failure. The failure is part of the path to something better if you make it that, right? And so, you know, talk about embracing the failure. I grew up being afraid of failing my whole life. I remember I got in junior high, I got a B+ in history, and it cost me valedictorian, and it was like the end of my life in junior high, right? Like, and I remember crying, and I, you know, my whole life I was afraid of failure. I see this in a little bit in my son too, and so I'm trying to intentionally build in like, actually, failure's where you learn, right? Failure's where you grow. And so you've got to embrace it. And when it happens, you've got to remember this is not the end. This is the path to something better. Because you're not going to get to a better life. You're not going to accomplish your goals. You're not going to accomplish your dreams unless you go through that failure. It just doesn't happen for anybody ever. And so, you know, that to say, when I bought my second one, that also was a punch in the gut because I didn't make any of the mistakes. I'm like, I'm not going to make any of the mistakes I made. I learned my lessons, and I did, but I didn't learn all the lessons, right? So there was more failure to come, and you know, even kind of just plowing forward. And so, you know, again, just part of the process, and you go through it, and you know, keep your head up, right? Because opportunity is always there, especially in the midst of failure, because it gives you an opportunity to pivot or to grow. And you know, it's when you seize those opportunities that you really can accomplish more than you even ever thought you could.
Yeah. It sounds cliche, but it's literally just not giving up, because that's the true failure, right? Is just throwing in the towel and saying, I'm going to go back to what I was doing. And there's nothing wrong with that, but you'll always in your mind think, man, I failed at that, you know, versus I tried till the end. Found something else.
And it's uncomfortable, right? It's like it, you know, and sometimes you get in a place where you just can't handle the discomfort for a while. And that's okay for a while, right? But really, if you want something bigger and better for your life, like no problem to take a break or to step back, right? Or it would not have been a problem if I sold that laundromat 2 years into it before it really had tried. Not a problem. As long as when I regathered myself, I went out and tried something again. Right. So,
yeah, I think that, and I know we have to land this bird in a minute, but I think the physical training attached to, you know, your skill sets and can you, is Krav Maga considered martial art? Can I say martial arts?
I mean, kind of. Krav Maga would not consider itself a martial art, but
but the martial arts will throw it under the umbrella. But there's a level of a high level of discipline and trying and failing and literally going through pain in order to learn. How much of that do you think was really essential to you continuing to plow through those hard times?
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's a part of it, right? And like when we can intentionally put ourselves in discomfort, it's like kind of like that choose your pain, right? Like you can have the pain of not doing anything and not becoming who you really could be, or you can, you know, put yourself intentionally in places that are going to, you know, maybe be difficult or painful, but are going to help you grow, help you develop a mindset that's going to lead to success in all areas of life, right? And so whether that's martial arts or training for a marathon or, you know, whatever that might look like for you, you know, I mean, I think it only helps you both physically, but also mentally and emotionally too.
Definitely. All right, brother. Well, this has been fantastic. I can continue for, you know, another hour or two with you. There's so much more to discover in your story. But we have to end at some point. And I want to share with the audience not only how they can get in touch with you, but first, in one word, how do you help people?
Connecting.
You want to expand that? Now you can use more than one word.
I can't expand it. You said one word. I mean, I love connecting people, right? Like the podcast platform is about connecting this industry with superstars. But that was my goal from the beginning. I want to create some people to look up to in this industry, right? So I want to connect people with each other, and I want to connect people with the information and the tools and the resources that they need to succeed. You know, and I happen to be in the laundromat industry. I'm not married to that vehicle, but that just happens to be where I'm at, you know, right now. And so connecting people with each other and connecting people with the knowledge, information, the resources, the tools that can help them achieve their goals.
Is there a laundromat resource con coming up at some point?
Well, yes, probably.
Should be.
There's been stuff in the works.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's because you talk about creating a platform for yourself where you have authority, do the interview styles. Now you inherit all their authority. Dude, it's next level when you become the dude at the conference. So I look forward to seeing something like within that space for you. That's awesome, brother. Really happy and proud to watch you accomplish all the things, you know, in our community, and looking forward to seeing more, man. So thanks though for being on the show, sharing your story and all your wild stories, man. I didn't realize we were going to stay so long on the hardships there, but yeah, fascinating. What's the best way people can reach you when they need you and want to potentially do some business together?
Yeah, absolutely. So laundromatresource.com. Jordan, J-O-R-D-A-N at laundromatresource.com. I mean, just we're on all the socials, the podcast is on all the platforms. So check it out.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thanks again, brother. It's been great.
Appreciate you.
That's it for now, folks. If you'd like to stay in touch with the show, you can contact me directly at eric@onairbrands.com. That's Eric, E-R-I-K. At onairbrands.com. And if you aren't already subscribed to the show, you can find us on iTunes, Spotify, or any other podcast platform. And please recommend us to one or two people in your circle. That will go a long, long way to growing our community. Also, if you could rate us on iTunes, just take a moment to give us 5 stars. And if they have more stars, give all of them. We'd greatly appreciate you for that. And always, always like, subscribe, and share this show on social media. We'd love you for that as well. And if you have any ideas or want to hear something on a future show, please hit us up. Maybe you have a question for one of my guests, or you want to tell a story, a success story. We'd love to hear from you. You can do that, especially if you're on the Anchor platform. You can leave us a voice message. We'd love to incorporate you and your voice on a future episode. Once again, folks, thanks again for listening to the Entrepreneur Circle. Please like, subscribe, and share. I am Eric Cabral, and as always, remember, your network is your net worth. So get in the circle.